Lawfare. We talk about it often on this show. It's when our rogue federal government goes after individuals because, well, they don't like what they have to say and they don't like that they're sticking up for Americans. And no one has been victimized of lawfare more than Jeff Clark, the former DOJ official, who is being targeted in two different ways, obviously, with the Fulton County prosecution. And he's also being targeted through the DC bar. Last week, we briefly discussed with Kane from Citizen Free Press the status of what's going on with Jeff Clark regarding his ethics trial here in Washington, D.C. His ethics trial was quite interesting, and Uncover D.C. did a great job at exposing all of this. But it ultimately exposed a lot of election fraud that, or alleged election fraud, I should say, that was never really followed up with an investigation. And well, who was responsible for all of that? Well, none other than the former Attorney General, Bill Barr. There were so many things that came out during that trial, and I wanted to detail it in length. And, you know, there's nobody better to talk about this with than the man himself, Jeff Clark. Jeff joins us today to discuss, as your trial has concluded, you are the former U.S. DOJ double assistant attorney general, and you're also a senior fellow for the Center for Renewing America. Jeff, thank you for joining us. It's been a crazy couple of weeks for you.
Well, it's great to be here, especially in the new studio, Brianna. I'm glad you invited me.
Well, I'm glad you're here. There's so much to go through because we were watching this kind of play out. And a lot of it, I mean, I had already known that there was a lot of issues with Bill Barr and the lack of hustle in investigating anything at this point when it, in regards to election fraud. And I've spoken about it previously as well. But, you know, my FBI sources told me that even the FBI was shutting people down from investigating. One person did tell me specifically, who wants to remain anonymous, that he was actually let go of the FBI because he just simply put in writing that he wanted to look into the tips. And what should he tell his staffers who were working with him, his other fellow agents who were getting all these tips? What should he do with it? And so we know that there was a well-organized effort to shut down anyone who was looking to just investigate these tips that were coming in. And that was kind of the highlight of what we saw coming out of your trial with the ethics trial that was going on. And so I wanted to talk to you about that because I thought it was very, very interesting. Now, you're being accused of two different things. You're charged with Rule 8.4C, which is attempted dishonesty, and Rule 8.5D, attempted serious interference with an administration of justice. Now, for our audience, that's nothing. I wouldn't read into any of that. What ultimately is happening is, Jeff, they're trying to go after you for just the idea that you would potentially look into election fraud claims that were coming in, and they didn't like that. So I believe this is an effort to silence you and silence anybody else that wants to come forward. But I want to bring everyone's attention to a soundbite that was really, really interesting that came out. It is of Operation security expert Harry Howery. Now, ultimately, he's detailing how he wanted to help out get a whistleblower status for a USPS contractor named Jesse Morgan. Now, Jesse Morgan was somebody who transferred ballots from New York to Pennsylvania. And well, Harry was somebody who was in the room while there was a call with Attorney General Bill Barr. Have him explain to you exactly what took place.
Well, who called who?
Bill Barr called Tony Schaefer.
The former Attorney General, Bill Barr?
At that time, he was the Attorney General.
All right, sir. And tell us about that conversation.
It was relatively irate, and he was telling Tony Schaefer to stand down on this investigation. It was not a long call.
And what was the response to that directive from the Attorney General?
It was kind of ambiguous, but it was sufficiently strong to say that the evidence had already been found, and the response was, I told you, you need to stand down on this.
And
the conversation was not long. it was agitated, to say the least.
Okay, so Harry's saying that he heard him say to stand down. Jeff, did anyone at the DOJ ever tell you to stand down from investigating any of these tips?
Well, that's a question, Brianna, that goes to all the privileges that are hemming me in. Let me put that off for a second, and let me just summarize for your viewers that there is either in the public record or in testimony from my trial, three separate incidents where former Attorney General Barr shut down investigations. One is that Bill McSwain, who was the U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, that's Philadelphia, my hometown, where my mom, who was a poll worker, certainly watched various shenanigans through the years and would bring home those stories to me. So this is not a topic that I had no prior exposure to. I also applied to clerk for a federal judge, Clarence Newcomer, who had a major election non-integrity case in Philadelphia, which he helped expose and shut down, called the La Nueva Forma, the new way to vote, which involves sort of something like absentee ballots before they were actually illegal, going door to door to collect them. And that was a no-no under Pennsylvania law at the time. So in any event, back to Bill McSwain. He was the U.S. attorney in Philadelphia, and he said that he had very important and credible election fraud information that he wanted to pursue. And so he went to Barr and he asked if he could investigate it. And Barr told him, no, don't investigate it. And if you find anything, or you've already found anything, turn it over to the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, who had already pre-announced, Brianna, that that Trump was going to lose in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So this was like a road to nowhere. And, you know, McSwain said, look, I'm a military guy. I saluted, even though I disagreed with it. Now, later, after he left office, after Biden had been inaugurated as president, I think in June of 2021, if memory serves, he sent a letter to President Trump where he exposed this episode. And we tried to get him in as a witness. More on that in a second. The other two episodes are the Jesse Morgan episode, where Colonel Tony Schaefer, who was in military intelligence, was ordered to stop his investigation of that incident and other incidents by Bill Barr. We did get that testimony in through expert and fact witness Harry Howery. He wore both of those hats. And then the third incident is one that that Matt Gaetz gave to us, because his former law partner, Larry Keefe, was the U.S. attorney in one of the districts of Florida. And there had been allegations that Andrew Gillum, who had run for governor, you know, Democrat, was engaged in election shenanigans. Larry Keefe wanted to investigate that, and Bill Barr told him to shut that down. So we got two of the three incidents in. Now let me circle back. Why didn't we get the third one in? Why didn't we get the McSwain letter in? We asked for permission from DOJ to have both Larry Keefe and Bill McSwain, two former U.S. attorneys in the Trump administration, to come in and testify. And DOJ blocked that. They blocked that under something that I'm sure, you know, you got to bear with me for some of these legalese kinds of things. But there's a Supreme Court case called Tuohy, T-O-U-H-Y, and it's led to a series of Tuohy regulations. Most departments, the Justice Department's no exception, have Tuohy regulations. And if you want to subpoena either a current or former official from that department, in this case, two U.S. attorneys, you have to get that department's permission in order to bring them in. So we were blocked from getting that permission. Meanwhile, Mr. Fox, the disciplinary counsel in D.C., he was able to get the permission to have me testify, if I had so chose, at this trial. And for Rosen and Donahue, two DOJ officials who were running the department at the end of the Trump administration, to come in and testify. So it was a total double standard, right? Rosen and Donahue can come in to testify against me. I'm exposed potentially to testify, but Keefe and McSwain, two former U.S. attorneys with stories to tell in my benefit, magically Biden administration said, no, they're not going to be able to testify.
Well, that sounds about right. Not that it's ethically correct, but it sounds like they're it's right, given everything that we know right now, that they're really just trying to do a cover up. I mean, there's no other way to look at this. We try to speak to people about things openly, and I'm constantly getting shut down, and nobody wants to talk about these things. But I'm assuming, just based on the position you're in right now, that you are feeling this extremely worse than the rest of us are. But we all want to still talk about it. I know a lot of people say, you know, 2020 is in the past, but it's not in the past, because number one, you're still dealing with the issues from 2020, but we're also going to be dealing with these issues heading into November, and it's going to happen. And then we're going to have people again not willing to step up. And I feel like they're making an example out of you, Jeff. We're going to have an issue right now where, let's say, President Trump decides to challenge the election, hypothetically. he's not going to find attorneys that want to represent him and help him push this through, because everyone's going to see what's happening to you, what's happening to Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman, and all these other people who have just simply stepped on and done what they're supposed to do. And that is to represent their client, to represent the president of the United States, and just to represent the American people, because we all want clarification in our election. Why do you think, or this, it's possibly speculation, so you could pivot if you need to, but why do you think Bill Barr was going around shutting these things down? Because it seems so strange, because, you know, I remember Bill Barr from the outside looking in, he seemed like he was somebody who aligned with us. And then to see him completely shutting down any type of election integrity investigation, it just doesn't seem like something that fit his kind of MO.
That's another question that I should reserve for a later time.
I figured that was going to happen.
stay tuned, Brianna, on that point. You know, let me say this. I think that you're right, that one reason why they're engaged in these lawfare persecution efforts, and actually I think we really do need a term that's stronger than lawfare, mm-hmm. like, you know, legal destructionism or something. I don't know what the right term is. I'll put my thinking cap on. Lawfare sounds too soft almost for what's going on. But I think the reason why they're doing this is to chill lawyers as to future election controversies. And it's not just election controversies, right? If they can do this over an election controversy, they can do it over a controversy about abortion policy, or they can do it over a controversy about foreign affairs and, you know, positions lawyers take in connection with that. They can do it as to the power of the administrative state in terms of some of the cases that have gone to the Supreme Court. They can just try to do this for anything where a lawyer is going against what the establishment wants, what the orthodoxy is. And then the second thing is, I think, you know, for maybe this is relevant to Rudy Giuliani, because back in the Reagan administration, he'd actually been the number three official in the Justice Department, the Associate Attorney General. And because I'd been in the Justice Department before, I think it's certainly relevant to me. I think that the other objective they have is to try to damage me so badly so that it would be more difficult for me to go back into the Justice Department. And I certainly know how that place works. And, you know, you could bring in someone from the outside and they'd spend the first 6 to 8 months just trying to figure out all of the different entities and how they fit together.
Yeah, there's a massive effort to just kind of discredit you. But again, folks, in the lead in, I told our audience that you worked in two different departments. Like, this wasn't, you weren't somebody who they didn't think highly of, because Bill Barr would have made sure that you didn't have all of that authority to do so. So I think it's laughable now when they try to take these attacks against you and try to bash your credibility here, because you are someone who's highly credible. And even before I got to meet you and got to know you, I did some research. I asked around, and everyone really liked and respected you during your time over the DOJ and other jobs that you took on. So it's discouraging to see it happening to you, because everyone speaks so highly of you, like I mentioned. But they also know that when President Trump is elected in November, that you're going to be someone who's going to be a really important person to push forward the DOJ's agenda, his agenda with the DOJ. And I think that's also another reason why they're doing all of this. So it's interesting to see it play out. But Jeff, during your time over the DOJ and during the transition after the election, what were some of the most, I guess, whatever you can talk about, anything egregious that you saw that you think that the American people should really know about right now? Because we got to be prepared for what's going to happen in November.
Well, I think that the American people have a sense of this when terms like the deep state and the administrative state have become popularized. And I should say, sometimes I have this argument with Steve Bannon a little bit, because his view is that the right term is administrative state, and it's not a deep state because it's in your face. And so administrative state is a better term. I actually distinguish between the two terms. I think the administrative state is the career bureaucracy, the sort of institutionalized fourth branch of government that really doesn't have a lot of turnover once a new president comes in, and that can be very resistant, and more on that in a second, to political direction if it's coming from a Republican president. Mm-hmm. The term deep state I reserve for the intelligence community. Mm-hmm. And I think also it's a thing that isn't just purely governmental. I think it straddles certain elements of the so-called elite media. And also I think it's an internationalist entity in a sense. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is why we get things like the war in Ukraine, and the fact that the Uniparty seems like desperately to want to have this war. Yeah. You know, they are constantly preaching a message that President Trump is anti-democratic. He's going to mean the end of democracy. But they're supporting a war in Ukraine where Zelensky isn't even holding elections.
Yeah.
So there's just a complete contradiction. They're censoring. They're working with big tech to censor. It's a public-private partnership of censorship. These things are the things that are fundamentally anti-American, anti-democratic. Those are the things the deep state does. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I encountered many ways in which the deep state was doing things like that. You know, one of the other things we asked for permission to do was to get declassification of the intelligence community report that was done about foreign election interference pursuant to a Trump executive order that was issued. And, you know, they had a report deadline of, if I'm remembering correctly, something like December 16th of 2020. Mm-hmm. They totally blew that deadline. They didn't put the report out until after the Biden administration was in place. And, you know, just to show you how totally screwed up this is, right? The head of the intelligence community is the director of national intelligence, right? Who at the time was John Ratcliffe. Mm-hmm. So John Ratcliffe dissents from the report of the intelligence community. It's his intelligence community, right? I don't know of any other situation in which someone who's essentially the boss dissents from what the career people are saying. And that's the position that we wind up in. So, you know, I encountered that as one example. And I would say, you know, there were several incidents of rank insubordination, even by the lawyers who reported to me. Yeah. I was able to shut down most of them, and more of them occurred in my service in the Bush administration than in the Trump administration. I think they realized that I wasn't a person who was going to tolerate that sort of thing. But look, you know, we had leaks all over the place. We had like Mr. Anonymous, the guy who was chief of staff at DHS. You know, just there are so many people who crept in either as infiltrators or as never Trumpers, just sort of biding their time. And I'll suggest to you that that's probably part of, but I don't think all of the explanation as to Bill Barr, in that, you know, he helped Trump to solve the Mueller problem. But I think by that time, everyone realized the Mueller thing and Russia gate was all a lie by that point anyway. But, you know, I just think he's came up through Bush 41, right? Like that's the kind of mindset he has. Trump entirely different. And so I think that he managed to maneuver himself into becoming attorney general for a second time. But I don't think he was ever really fully down with the Trump agenda.
Interesting. I mean, you would know better than anyone. So that's just why we ask you these questions. It's really interesting to hear. I mean, so many times, you know, we talk to people, we see them on TV, you don't really get the full gist of it. So I appreciate that honest take. I want to talk again about the hearing that wrapped up. The committee is now saying that you violated at least one ethic rule, but they're not being specific on which one you violated. This whole process has been about a 6-month process for you. Where do you go from here? How does this all play out?
Oh no, it's longer than that. It's already like a 3.5-year process. We've been fighting with them. And my case began before John Eastman's case began, significantly before.
Yeah.
Part of it was under seal from October of 2021 until July of 2022. The case was under seal and we were fighting at the DC Court of Appeals. And the issue we were fighting about is an issue that I won in February and then a decision issued on March 15th. So just think about that. We were fighting about an issue of whether I could be subpoenaed for documents or whether that violated my Fifth Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. And it took until March 15th for a published decision to issue on that of this year. That's how long the battle's been going on. And that's how much the legal expenses have been mounting up, you know, cost, you know, opportunity costs of my time that could be spent in other ways preparing potentially for a new administration. And look, let me say this. This is something that should have resulted in the case being thrown out from the start. In the very first call that my lawyer, Harry McDougald, whose voice you heard on the clip you played from Harry Howery about the Barr stand down order to Colonel Schaefer, because he was in the room. Harry talked to Mr. Fox, the disciplinary counsel, Hamilton Phil Fox III, you know, in DC. And he indicated that I would be standing on my Fifth Amendment rights because I had recently done the same as to the January 6th committee, and his subpoena was basically just a rejiggered version of that subpoena. Mm-hmm. And I successfully resisted the January 6th committee, and their threats to hold me in criminal contempt, like happened with poor Peter Navarro, and you know, luckily Steve Bannon, he gets to you know, still stay out pending appeal, mm-hmm. whereas Peter didn't get that benefit. And so what did Mr. Fox say to Harry? He said, if you fight this, I will ratchet up the discipline on Clark. Don't give me this Fifth Amendment stuff. And, you know, that's a violation of my constitutional rights right there. And ultimately, the D.C. Court of Appeals held that his subpoena just from the outset was a violation of the Fifth Amendment. So we have someone who's the chief ethics investigator and enforcer in the District of Columbia, and he's the one violating the Constitution. And I stand, you know, accused of all these things when I've had, you know, I think an enviable and unblemished career up until this point.
Yeah. And everyone speaks highly of you, Jeff. So it's not like you're somebody who they don't speak highly of. And it's just interesting that it's all coming about. It's not just coming about, but it's just interesting how they're going after you. I think it's overly aggressive, but I think it's to prove a point. And so many people are paying attention to what's happening right now in our country. Jeff, I mean, we continue to have these discussions all the time. And like you mentioned, this is a very expensive process. The goal here is to drain Jeff financially between the Fulton County prosecution and this. So if you guys would like to head over to his GiveSendGo page, it's Jeff Clark Legal Defense. That's so important, guys. We have to keep pitching in and helping folks like Jeff out. So whatever you could give, please head over there right now. Jeff stood up for the American people, and so we can't continue to allow this to take place, and we can't turn our backs now. Jeff, thank you for joining us. I know this was a crazy, crazy couple of last weeks for you, given everything that's gone on, and I know it's not done yet. So we appreciate you jumping in with us today.
Well, thanks, Brianna. I really appreciate you having me on. I hope people do think about going to the givesendgo.com/Jeff Clark. site, and look, the Lord is helping me here. And, you know, my dad and my mom, you know, whole family really taught me that you have to stand up for what you believe in and that you can't be cowed. And so I'm going to keep fighting because it is what I believe to be the oath to the Constitution that I swore to, and I'm going to uphold it.
That's great, Jeff. That's what we need. We need more people like that. And that's the problem. So many people back down and they abandon the American people. But that's not what you're doing. That's why we need to go out there and support him. So again, folks, head over to his GiveSendGo page, please. And whatever you could donate to his legal defense fund is greatly appreciated. We'll be right back. You guys, I've said it once before, so I'm going to say it again. And under the Biden regime, I've never been more worried about my financial future. I called my good friend, Dr. Kirk Elliott, because I wanted to come up with a plan put in place to make sure I was secure. And he came with a plan for me to invest in silver.
I'm rich.
I've got my silver. I'm feeling so much better about my future. I highly recommend you give him a call and just chat with his team. 720-605-3900. And you could also head over to his website if you'd like to schedule an appointment. It's KirkElliottPhD.com/Brianna. I just finished unpacking my latest order from MyPillow, and there's so much to tell you guys about. The new MyPillow 2.0 line is incredible. And it's not just me. Gia and Giuseppe are also loving their MyPillow dog beds. Gia is so obsessed with it. She wants to eat on it, play on it. She literally never leaves her bed. She is loving the MyPillow dog beds, and I'm sure your pups at home would too. And it's just not that. My best friend, Allie, I gifted her the new MyPillow slippers, and she's loving it. She describes it as walking on clouds. It's so incredible. So make sure you head over to MyPillow.com and secure up to 66% off. It's an incredible deal. Make sure you use promo code Brianna. That's B-R-E-A-N-N-A. And you guys got to get there now. Once word gets out that these items are all on the market now, the updated ones, well, he's going to sell out quickly. You guys, I actually mean it. Gia, Giuseppe love the dog beds, but that's not the only thing they love, of course. A couple of days ago, I had to give them a bath and I used the MyPillow towels, and Giuseppe was loving it. He was literally, I guess it felt like a hug for him. So he was loving it. I tied it all around him and he didn't want me to take it off of him. So he was really enjoying that. So again, if you guys want to go and support Mike Lindell, who you know is someone fighting for our country, head over right now to MyPillow. Brie.com. Use the promo code. You can use Brie. We've made it so simple for you as well. B-R-E. That's it. And that's the best promo code to use right now to secure up to 66% off. You got to head over there and give it a look. If you used his products before in the past, give it a look again, because he's fixing them up. It's like a 2.0 line right now he's got going on. That's what you're going to want to get. I'm telling you, we're loving it. We're loving the bed sheets as well these days, the Giza sheets. So head over there, take a look around, use promo code Brie, B-R-E. Now, you guys, tomorrow we have a jam-packed program for you, of course. So you're not going to want to miss it. Make sure you tune in. We'll be live from Washington, D.C. Have a great evening. Thanks for joining us tonight. And if you enjoyed that segment, make sure you hit that like button. And if you want to see the news before it becomes the news, you have to subscribe to our channel. And well, if you have a liberal friend that you're looking to save, make sure you share this content with them.